We're going to start the meeting, and today we're just going to hear the proposals. A lot of them, we really don't have the bill, so this is just to familiarize us, so we won't be taking votes, so we won't be laying them over for possible inclusion, but we're going to hear testimony so that we're familiar with these. And the first one is Representative Fritz. Department of Human Services, okay.
Mr. Chair.
I was just looking at this blue sheet.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming, do you think it's possible we could get like a master list of all the stuff that we're going to be thinking about so we could keep it all in one of our... Oh, all of stuff? Okay. Or just give me one.
Thanks.
So, proceed with your testimony,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I understand that you would like us to go through each one of the department's recommendations, and then we'll point out which of those were included in the governor's proposal. With me today is my name is Russ Koister. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Chemical and Mental Health Services at the Department of Human Services. With me is Alan Van Buskirk, Director of Plant Management for State Operated Services. We had forwarded four proposals, including Phase 2 of the Sex Offender Program Expansion, System-Wide Asset Preservation Fund, System-Wide Campus Redevelopment, and the remodeling of Anoka, a West Wing Miller building, as a training site. So those are the proposals that we forwarded. Mr. Van Buskirk will go through the specifics of those proposals, and we'll both be available to you for questions as they occur.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll start out with our number one priority that was submitted to the governor for consideration. That's the Minnesota Sex Offender Expansion Phase 2. The request was for $90 million. This request is for funds to design, construct, furnish, and equip additional residential program and support capacity for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, which we refer to as MSOP. This is located at the city of Moose Lake. This is the second phase of a two-phase project implemented in 2006 to expand the MSOP program bed capacity by 800 beds. The 2006 legislature appropriated funds for phase one of the MSOP expansion project, and building construction began in early summer of 2007, with completion scheduled for phase one for the spring of 2009. Phase one will provide new secure residential treatment space to accommodate 400 additional new patients at the MSOP facility at Moose Lake, but does not provide adequate space for support activities for these 400 beds. The 2006 legislature also authorized funds to design the second phase of the MSOP expansion. Phase 2 will provide an additional 400 new beds for the MSOP facility at Moose Lake and the necessary support space, recreation, industry, dietary, more health space, education, programming, and administration to support the new 800 bed capacity on Moose Lake campus. Construction documents, plans, and specifications are complete for Phase 2 and are ready to go out for bid. Construction contracts for Phase 2 could be awarded in approximately 6 weeks after letting the project out for bid. So, for instance, if we let the project out for bid next week, the project could be awarded for construction within 6 weeks, and the construction could actually start within a month after the contract award. The project is funded during the 2008 session. Phase 2 would be ready for occupancy in the fall of 2010. The governor does not recommend capital funding for this request in 2008. He has a budget planning estimate of $179,000 included for an anticipated funding for the project in 2010. The second project is system-wide asset preservation, safety, and security.
Chair, do you want a question?
Yeah. Representative Abler.
Thanks. Oh, yeah, welcome back. I haven't seen you guys for a while. Just a philosophical question more. I mean, the details. Well, it's amazing we're going to fund it and then put it off a little bit, but I'm sure it costs more then. We passed some Get Tough on Sex Offenders laws, and which is giving you all a lot of work. more than anybody expected. And there's been discussions over the years, or at least that have occurred, about making them, some are treatable, some aren't, and civil commitments, and all this stuff. And it's captured a lot more folks than you ever expected. Bringing forward this request was probably not on your mind when we passed all those laws. Is someone thinking about how to do this? This is another, what, $90 million? It's amazing the way the money goes. We had a special session to fund some of these. And I don't mind paying the staff. I don't mind keeping them off the street. But there's some discussion about another way to do it that's not going to take all the money we ever wanted to fix bridges with, or our education, and things that we might actually want to still do in the state.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, we're growing by about 60 a year currently, and that's anticipated to raise to about 70 per year as we go forward in the planning years. I think you really have a couple of choices of what to do with the population. That is to retain them in prison longer would be one choice. There were laws passed a couple of years ago that would allow for indeterminate sentencing. At that time, we assumed that our growth would curve off, but we've since learned that there's only been, I believe, three who have been sentenced under those new sentencing guidelines. So we've lost a great deal of confidence that's going to help us in this matter. The other choice we have is to release them to the community, and there's a process, you know, that is in law about how that is done, and there's lots of reasons why one would want to be very cautious about that. We visited other programs. For example, we visited Wisconsin this year, and Wisconsin has a similar size program. They're growing by about 35 a year right now, while we're so about half of what our growth is. We understand, have released 60 into supervised release, intensive community supervision. About, I believe, 60% of those have been returned. They are always careful to clarify for rules violations and not touch violations. But they have returned about six, so they have about between 20 and 30 released. So and I give you that as kind of a context that it's a problem for every state, and even states that may be more aggressive than we are in terms of releasing from commitment, you're still only talking a small number of individuals, 20 or 30 people in that situation. There has been a subcommittee, Health and Human Services subcommittee, that I believe in the House has had members attend, and Senator Berglund and Senator Higgins, that where they're trying to look at other sorts of options. How could we provide longer treatment in the corrections location? That's certainly cheaper than the treatment requirements that we may have. There are ideas being looked at, but I haven't heard of any silver bullets on this one so far.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Abler.
Thank you. It's nice to know where we are at. And certainly when they get released, it does generate a lot of constituent contacts in an election year, so that's always, and not the way you want to get contacts. Just one more question. So the public safety piece, which they tried to give some relief valve on that, hasn't taken hold, and so it's still a human services matter, and the public safety team is not really looking into that very much on their side, or is that part of the Bergman work group, is where public safety is doing with that as well, and labor and all that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, public safety has participated in that work group. I would also add that, you know, our costs at this time are about $370 a day. That's very expensive. It's certainly not as expensive as what it costs us to treat people in the security hospital for people who are mentally ill and dangerous. That's more expensive, and it's similar at Anoka Regional Treatment Center. This is treatment. It's not imprisonment, and that's what we're required to do, so it's going to be more costly than prison. But I suppose the good news is we think that we're at the high mark of our per diem cost, because we've been going through such a tremendous transition over the last 3 years. You know, before 2004, our growth was about 10 a year. Since then, Since 2004, our patient population has doubled. We've had challenges in terms of space. We've had to move people from unit to unit as space became available. That's very expensive when you're moving people out of one unit, which is partially populated, into another unit that's partially populated. We've had to redesign our entire treatment program. We've had to redesign our security for obvious reasons. And all those changes and transitions are expensive, and we're looking really hard at the per diem right now about how to bring that per diem down. We've also returned 94 patients last, I assume it's more now, back to corrections for violations. Either their supervised release to our program or because they were involved actively in criminal activity in our program. We have a very active special investigation unit. That saves a lot of money as well. The bad news is that we don't have our appropriations only take us through this biennium, and then they're flattened, and so we do not have appropriations in our base that represent the growth that we're going to be seeing in 2010 and 2011.
Mr. Chair, that's not in the forecast.
That's an enabler.
This is not, that growth is not in the forecast. That won't be in the February forecast. This is your projection.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, it is not in the, we projected, the money's not in the forecast.
Oh.
Thanks. Okay,
I proceed with the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, the department's number two project is system-wide asset preservation, safety, and security. It's a request for $5 million. This project would fund system-wide asset preservation, safety, and security projects with state-operated service facilities. It includes repairs and replacements to basic infrastructure and key mechanical, electrical utilities, and HVAC systems. It also addresses code deficiencies, safety hazards, repairs and replacement of roofing systems, and touch pointing and other building envelope work such as window and door replacement. This request would also address the need to upgrade fire and life safety, items such as fire sprinkling installation, emergency generator installation and or replacement, smoke detection and alarm system upgrades and modernization, and campus building security. Items such as access control, CCTV systems, alarm systems at state-operated, state-owned facilities. We have a list of projects associated with this request, and it's available upon request. The governor recommended $5 million for this project. The third project is system-wide campus redevelopment, reuse, and demolition. This request is for $4,500,000. This project request is for funds to address the disposition of surplus facilities at the state-operated services campuses. This 2008 request is the third phase of a multi-year request for disposing of surplus RTC facilities. The focus of this request is to obtain funds and legislative authority to upgrade basic infrastructure needed to facilitate viable redevelopment and reuse of the Brainerd campus, and to demolish buildings that are determined to be non-functional or non-contributing to the master plan solution, which we put together with the local community. Continuing to maintain the Brainerd campus as it operates today has a significant impact on SOS system's operating budget. Just operating a power plant and maintaining the existing heating of vacant buildings is very expensive, as you can probably imagine. Although this project focuses on the Brainerd campus, some funds may be needed to facilitate the disposition of the remaining surplus property in the system. The status of state-operated services surplus property disposition project is, we closed on the sale of the Wilmer Regional Treatment Center on January 16, 2006. We closed on the sale of the Fergus Falls campus during the last week of June 2007. A purchase agreement was signed by the state and Cass County for the sale and purchase of the Agua Chin campus. Closing is currently scheduled for the middle of April 2008. Funding of this request will assist in addressing the disposition of the Brainerd campus. The governor recommended $4,500,000 for this request. The fourth project, the final project, is at Anoka. It's to remodel Miller West Wing and remodel the west wing of the Miller building. It's a request for $380,000. It's a two-phase project. We would request construction funds in 2010. This request is for funds to design the renovation and construction of the Miller West Building as a clinical training center, office, and support complex for state-operated service assistance. The project of this, the scope of this project would involve the construction of a mezzanine, installation of windows, elevator, sprinkler, fire detection, alarm systems, security systems, communication, video conferencing, mechanical and electric upgrades to support the new use of this space. It would also allow for the development of additional parking to handle the new volume of vehicles associated with the training center. Upon completion of the systems transition of the adult mental health program to community settings and the disposition of the Wilmer, Fergus Falls, Agua Ching, and Brainerd campuses, most space previously used for training outstate will no longer be available. Development of this clinical training center on the Anoka campus would provide this needed space while facilitating the joint education relationship state-operated services has with the University of Minnesota Medical School and other metro area professional technical colleges. Classrooms and support spaces would be specifically designed to accommodate the specialized training and in a location most appropriate for it to be, in close proximity to the hospital. This would facilitate the integration of theory and practice and the linking of clinician training directly to the patient. This renovated space would also act as a lab for best practices and evidence-based practice and would provide an environment for for professionals in psychiatry, nursing, social services, psychology, program administration, and support functions to learn in a clinical environment. The governor did not recommend capital funding for this request. Mr. Chairman, that concludes our overview of the department's request.
All right, if we could go back to the Brainerd one. Are those buildings mainly empty now?
Mr. Chairman, there are more empty buildings than there are utilized buildings at this point in time.
And do we have patients in those, or have they been turned over to the community?
We have one, two, three residential buildings that are being used for patient programs. We have the large administration building that we are using for our administrative offices. However, a large part of that building is vacant. We also lease part of the administration building to the Federal Veterans Administration, and they have operate a veterans clinic on the Brainerd campus in that space. And we're in negotiations right now for them to take additional space in that building, and that building is Building 1. And we're also developing an office space for managing or processing Minnesota Care applications on the campus, and that'll take utilize one full building.
So that building would not be demolished then?
That's correct.
Other questions? Representative Dean.
Thank you. I would like to go back to the Moose Lake facility, if that's all right. I'm a little rusty on this because we toured that, I think, 05 and 06. Could you talk a little bit about the partitioning between Department of Corrections and Department of Human Services on that site and how that, as I remember, there would be some swing space available in the Department of Corrections through the completion of this project and how those two things might work together?
Right.
Mr. Kleister.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean. We would anticipate, again, that building opening in the first building, the first phase, we will occupy almost fill by the time it's open. Within a couple of years, we will need additional space. So we would plan to open, to populate, begin populating that building in the fall of 2010. We would have 400 beds available. Obviously, it would take some time to fill that. Although at 70 a year, it's not time that we can't see in the future. In the meantime, we have talked about utilizing that space, making that space also available to the Department of Corrections. Some of those wings available, probably particularly to their sex people who, in their program who are in sex offender treatment as well, so that we can coordinate both the security piece of it as well as the treatment side of it. We are located right next to the Booth Lake Correctional Facility. In fact, it's probably, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 yards away. You can see the Booth Lake Correctional Facility from where our facilities stand there as well. You know, I would also mention that when we talk about cost, one of the reasons for bringing, we have really three reasons to bring this forward. One is because it's needed for treatment space. The first phase did not accommodate the treatment space for the first 400 beds. The other reason is certainly it's easier to provide security in the design of these new facilities. I believe when you took the tour of Moose Lake, you saw that there was 25-bed units scattered down corridors, and in this facility, it's based upon the corrections K-model design, although we have one additional wing because of space requirements. So it's much, much cheaper to operate. In fact, we would estimate the gap between current operations and operations in that new facility to save about $50 a day per patient. So it's treatment, it's easier to provide security, and it also is cheaper to provide. In fact, our estimates suggest that the building would probably pay for itself over time and save operations costs.
Representative Dean.
And just to the way as it was presented, that in the governor's proposal, he said do it in 10. You're saying we need to do it faster because of bed capacity issues, and we might have to turn these folks out onto the street. But as I look at those two facilities together, I see built-in capacity on the correction side that could be immediately taken up. Are you saying that there's not enough uptake in the correction side to do this in 10 without releasing folks?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not suggesting release folks. I'm not suggesting at all that we're not supporting the governor's timing on this. I'm just saying the reason we brought this forward this year is because of the savings that we can get out of it, the need we had for space, and that savings would pay for itself. We're going to have to look at other options. For example, currently, because we don't have enough space, we rent space from the Department of Corrections, and they, in turn, have to move more inmates to Appleton. That costs us, since we have to pay for the cost of all that, we're paying about $8 million a year for about 200 beds for the Department of Corrections. So, you know, certainly, while during this two-year window of time of delay, we're going to have to look at other sorts of options like that. We're going to look at how much longer can we stay at St. Peter. There are other demands for those beds out of the MIND folks. We will look at staying in the annex, what we refer to as the current correction space. We will look at additional correction space so that we can provide, so we have the treatment space we need. Treatment's important, also the security, because we have to keep these people busy. And we'll look at maybe bringing in temporary space, like I believe Corrections has done in the past. Those are all options that we can look at over the next two-year period. If you had unlimited money, would you want those options? No, but you know, we're facing the same kind of decisions this body's faced with. We have a limited bonding bill. We had, I believe, in the administration, $4 requested for every $1 available, and sometimes good proposals have to be put off because there's just not enough room.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Korsha. I'm wondering about sort of the long-range vision here, and these are expensive programs at the state level for sex offenders and other, you know, highly needed, but we don't have, as I understand it, when they're ready to discharge from the state-operated facilities, we do not have necessarily within our communities facilities and programs to receive them, and whether the planning is working there in terms of how the progression of support services works. At the same time, I'm hearing that there's less and less utilization of your other state-operated services because there has been developing a community-operated support structure for people with mental illness and other issues that traditionally the state has served, and whether, you know, there needs to be some rebalancing in the and repurposing of some of the current programs in this big system. And, you know, and whether or not the capital plan that you're presenting, both for maintenance and repairs and, you know, sort of takes into account that sort of changing demand, because I think if we build the capacity at Moose Lake to process more people through, but there's no place in the community to catch them when you want to discharge them, while you still have excess capacity and or rates that are getting to the point that nobody wants to use you anymore, which is what I'm hearing is another challenge, if we don't kind of have a plan that puts all the pieces together, it's hard to see sort of where we're going, and I'm hoping you've got that big picture plan, or if you don't, that you know, you'll let us know what you need to do to kind of put that together, and if you need any policy decisions from us. But I couldn't, from reading this, sort of understand how the different pieces are working together.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lawson, let me take a shot at it. It's a big question. It's a really good question. You know, the first part of it was, what kind of infrastructure do we have as people are released from this program? I will remind you that it's the courts that release people from this program. They're committed to us from the courts. The courts have the ultimate authority to release them. But we have to imagine that people are going to be released over time. It's an excellent question. We do not have the infrastructure in the community that is necessary to do that. In our conversations that we've seen the infrastructure we've seen in other states includes reliance on intensive supervised release like we've seen in the corrections site. And we've entered into the discussions with the Department of Corrections about how we could partner in developing that capacity. But they already do that for other inmates that they release directly to the community. Certainly, you know, seeing a range of services from intensive supervised release to 24-hour supervision in the community, those are all part of the conversations that we have. We've just developed on our St. Peter campus what we call community preparation services, which is an apartment-like unit, a house-like unit that is outside the secure perimeter. One person has just been admitted to that recently. And so you raised a really good issue about, is there a community infrastructure there that provides the support, the treatment, and the supervision necessary to accommodate releases as they occur? And we're having those discussions. And I think Corrections provides us with expertise on that. With respect to the big picture and the vision for the department, we've realized for some time that it's not good for us to co-locate the St. Peter campus with both sex offenders and people who are mentally ill. There's very different needs. They present very different challenges, and frankly, we don't want at all to risk the stigma across those populations. And it requires a different culture of treatment and security. In our sex offender population, 60% of our patients score high on psychopathy tests. That means that we have to be very, very careful. It has to be a corrections-like secure system. We use lie detector tests. We use other sorts of security measures that we wouldn't want to apply to people who are even committed as mentally ill and dangerous. And that has always been a tension on that St. Peter campus. How do we have a campus that accommodates both when the needs are very different? And how do we respect the needs of the ID? So we wanted to move off of campus. And we've been working towards that, and phase one is a piece of that, and our phase two project is another piece of that. Another part of that vision is we can't provide treatment and security in old state hospital buildings because it's expensive. The sight lines are poor. The unit sizes are small. That's why we've gone to looking at the case structure for the corrections uses for their inmate population for our treatment population, because instead of having to have a security bubble on each 25-bed unit, we can have one security bubble that covers 400 beds. It's just much, much cheaper. So our vision, larger vision, is to get off the St. Peter campus, consolidate it on the Moose Lake campus, develop facilities that are much more efficient to manage, look at other states who are doing well with sex offender treatment, try to duplicate that, which we've done a lot of, and then build a community infrastructure that is ready for the event that people are released by the court system. And we're open to advice on this. This is I'm not saying we have all the answers, because this is a tough population, and all the states we're finding are struggling with the same thing.
Representative Abler.
Thanks. Just a short question. I think this has been really enlightening. I just was looking at those sheets, and it dawned on me that noticing the structure of this year's bonding bill, and there's a little more transportation put in this bonding bill than customary. If that wouldn't have been there, and I just was feeling it may not wind up in the bill, but who knows how it shakes out. Do you think that that the Moose Lake and other things would have been a higher recommendation than the governor picked? Mm-hmm. Would those have been on his mind?
Mr. Chair, Representative April, I would guess so, because the governor has put it in his planning estimate. That tells me that it's important, that this is a proposal that has credibility to the governor, that he thinks that there's a need there. Again, it's a matter of limited funds. And you know, so as I said before, there were a lot of proposals that had merit that were in front of the governor's office, but you're looking at $4 for every dollar available. You have to make some tough decisions.
Thanks.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Koistra. I'm just wondering, as we're talking about release of sex offenders or release of folks back into the community, I'm wondering how many have been released out of the Moose Lake facility?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, we had released one with a provisional discharge some time ago that was returned to the facility for violation, and then we've just recently released someone out of the secure perimeter. And I'll go back to something I mentioned before about Wisconsin, who is quite well known in the nation as an ideal program, serves about 400 people like we do currently, and they've released 60, and about, I believe, about 35, 40 have been returned. So they're talking about 25 people who have been who are in the community currently. So you're not talking about big numbers in the community.
Representative Brock.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I was getting at that because when we talk about having infrastructure available for the release of these people, you know, the infrastructure for one or two is very different than the infrastructure for 60. And so that's what I was trying to connect the dots on that.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Koistra, I had a meeting with my Buffalo Alina Hospital director and the local police chief in Buffalo and the Lake County Sheriff, talking about dangerous individuals and mental health individuals, situation where they deal with these people who have been on meth or drugs, and then combining that with trying to find beds for people like this. It seems like we're holding them in our corrections facilities, but we have no place to put them for help getting health concerns met. Are beds that much in demand and that much not available?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'll clarify that we're now talking about a different population, people who are mentally ill and often have co-occurring chemical dependency. So I want to clarify that because it's important. And it's interesting that what we've looked at in bed capacity studies, it is true that we are having problems in the emergency room. It is true that we are seeing problems with psychiatric bed capacity. When we've done the analysis, and this is an analysis that was done by an East Metro group of hospitals, what they've concluded is that we have people going into the psychiatric beds who could have been served in a less restrictive setting. We have people staying in hospital beds that could be discharged sooner for lack of community service. So while the problem often shows up at the deep end level, at the psychiatric bed level, the solution that was concluded from this particular study was we need more intermediate care, subacute type care settings to serve this population. But that does not take it away at all or intended to diminish that we have a problem in the showing up in our hospitals right now with respect to psychiatric bed capacity. This is primarily a metro area and close surrounding area issue, because I will say in our experience in state-operated services where we have the small 16-bed units, we're not able to staff all those units because of the shortage of psychiatrists. So we have 30 beds that we're not staffing currently because we haven't been able to hire psychiatrists. We still have, last I heard, 20 beds that are not serving people because the demand's not there. So I also want to clarify, it's a different question for the metro area than it is for outstate Minnesota, who have done a remarkable job in developing community capacity, who also I think people are more connected to the community, frankly, coming from a rural area myself. I just think there's a better community connection to the mentally ill in the greater Minnesota than there is in the metro area.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Quaker, you got me thinking now about what's going on over in Wisconsin. Are the treatment programs that much different? What's going on over there with 40% or 40 out of the 60 being returned? I'm trying to figure out what we're doing differently.
Representative Broad, we're not, our state has not released people recently. That's the biggest difference. But they're always quick to clarify that the reason they're returned is because of violations to the rules on release. And they have stressed to us they have very rigid rules when they release somebody. And there are rules that are beyond what you and I live by on a day-to-day basis about being prompt with check-in, being prompt on everything. And if they violate that, they come back. And so that's the reason why they have people released, because they have to draw very, very clear expectations for these people because of the risks that they bring with them.
Any other questions? Well, thank you, too, for your presentation. And Representative Hilty is here. She wants to add something to this. Thank you. Representative Hilty has a bill, House File 2815, that relates to this.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Sorry not have been able to be here earlier. The bill that you to which you referred is the bill that would provide funding for phase two of construction at the MSOP in Blue Lake, which, as I'm sure has already been discussed, is not part of the governor's recommendations for the bonding proposal. So recognizing that, I realize that as prospects without support of the administration are not good. The reason that I chose to say anything at all at this point, Mr. Chair, is that I think the committee, and maybe this has already been thoroughly discussed, but I think that the committee should be aware that phase one of the construction at Moose Lake is well underway and scheduled to be completed in about a year, providing 400 additional beds to that facility. However, it's only in phase two that any of the other parts of the facility are considered. Phase one is just beds, and what is lacking is all of the necessities, in my opinion, for the facility to actually be able to provide a successful treatment center or treatment program. I don't know if it has been described what is involved in the second phase, but that's
they talked about a case building.
The part that would house patients is, I think, just not similar, quite similar to phase one, but phase two also includes recreational facilities, facilities for work programs, for offices, for consultation and treatment, which, if we have an increase in the population, that will be accommodated by phase one. What's there now will certainly be inadequate for that. And I think a question that will arise at some point is, how can you justify this facility as a treatment program when really all it amounts to at this point is a prison? Because if we don't have anything there except capacity to house people, and we have not provided in any scale that would be possibly required for any of the treatment parts of the program, how can we continue to justify it as a treatment program? Just wanted to get that on the record, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Gottwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, one question I have as I look at this, we're talking about $90 million. It's a good 10% of the bonding request. And we've got two people released so far. One of them returned. And I am just interested if anybody among your testifiers or yourself could tell us what the statistics are for successful treatment. I'm not sure how that's measured, whether it's by recidivism or some other measure, but how successful is it when we put people into these treatment facilities? Are they cured? Are they? Could anybody speak to those statistics? Because I think it's important as we're talking about spending these precious public dollars, what they're going to accomplish.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwell, I think Mr. Fletcher would be much better qualified to address that question than I am. I know that in terms of people having been released from the program, we have not exactly seen a stampede out the door at this point. But the debate about the program and the need for the facilities has sort of already taken place. And I just think that we really need to be aware that if we do not maintain this as a legitimate program, there's very real risk of the court challenge that would just say this is not a treatment program, this is just continued incarceration.
Thank you, Representative.
I'll ask a quick question. So this is, just to clarify, this is for people whose prison terms have expired? Just to give us...
Mr. Chair, Representative Keith, that's correct.
Yeah. Other questions for...
Civil commitment.
Yeah.
But these are really questions for the department.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Hilty, and we're not going to vote on any of these today, so...
I understand. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do you want to ask Mr. Claster that question?
No, I mean, I think Representative Hilty's point is important.
Yeah. Where are we going? Well, Representative Fritz.
It's pretty interesting. The new building.
I've been in the city, but
the new one looks like Lionel.
With the kind of the barbed wire on it.
Thank you, Chairman Huntley and members. I'm Representative Patty Fritz from the District 26B, and I have with us today the Remembering with Dignity Bonding Proposal. And I first off want to thank you for last year's funding for this proposal we received. However, we're back again with another proposal for further funding for this very important project. And I have with me folks here who have been working on this for a long time. I did myself visit the graveyard in Faribault, which is right behind the Faribault State School and Hospital property. That's what I knew it as, and now that's the Faribault Correctional Facility. And did see for myself the graves that are there and that are finished. And however, I must add, they need to continue to be kept up and we need to look at the maintenance of those graves as well as get them for these folks. So I will turn this over to my testifiers, and they will. I'll have James introduce the folks to my right. Jim?
I'm Jim Fassett-Carman, community organizer with Advocating Change Together and project manager for the Remembering with Dignity project. And I'd like to introduce Liz Coltis, who's a board member of Advocating Change Together, and Melvin Hagenson, who is a founding member of Remembering with Dignity. They'll speak first. So Melvin will speak first.
The Moon Dini is a project that Edstone State Hospital, Edstone is numbers and no names and no with no Dini at all. No ID to find them and possible voting members names on the headstones and numbers changing them names and numbers don't have ID of graves no graves don't have headstones at all sometimes and is more people of this city can come down and display in front of you. It's good for us to practice this.
Thank you, Mr. Hagen.
Thank you, Jim.
First of all, my name is Elizabeth, and yes, Jim did say I'm on the board of directors for ACT of Advocating Change Together, and I'm honored to be on that board. The reason why I became involved in Remembering with Dignity is there's been a lot of problems where people with disabilities like I have been labeled. They've been labeled like being called mentally retarded. We want to get away from that. We also want to get away from having numbers put on the graves just because that's not the answer. We want names put on the graves because we want to start something new. Think about the past where the numbers had been on the graves, where families and friends couldn't see that their families and friends because there were numbers. Now, tell me, how would you like to see that? Would you like to see names put on the graves or numbers? I would say I'd recommend names and not the numbers.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for letting us testify, and it's been actually less than a year, I think, since we were here and talking to you. So, you know, most of you are familiar with this project. I just want to give you a little bit of an update. Since we spoke to you last year, 1,500 named headstones have been placed in state hospital cemeteries in Hastings and Rochester and St. Peter. That was funding from a bonding appropriation in 2005. And last year, 2007, $200,000 was appropriated. That funding is going to be used for this year for headstones to complete the Anoka State Hospital Cemetery. There's 400 graves, unmarked graves in Anoka. And to complete the St. Peter Regional Treatment Center cemetery that's on the campus there, approximately another 375 or so. And then with all the funding that's remaining after those two to be placed in Rochester. And we won't finish Rochester. Rochester has, we've placed about 500 headstones there, but there's over 2,000 total. So we'll just get further along in that project. I want to just point out the headstone, the large cement block up here. This headstone number 1292 is for a person named Louis Fredrickson. I don't know his date of birth, but he died October 10th, 1951. And it's from the Hastings State Hospital Cemetery. When we started there, there was nothing in the ground. It was a beautiful field with lots of nice oak trees, but you wouldn't know there were any markers there. You wouldn't know it was a cemetery. A lot of people played, you know, paintball, hunted there. When the monument company last fall was placing the named markers, they found two of these, you know, underneath the sod when they were placing the names. And then we ran into somebody who said that they had found some or ran into some at some point sort of down the valley, down the ravine. The cemetery sits on a bluff over what they call the Sand Coulee, which runs to the Mississippi River. So we organized a search crew and went to down the woods, down the ravine, and we found 15 of these numbered markers that looked like they had been basically picked up and rolled down the hill, down into the woods. And this is one of them from down in the hill. The other one you may recognize, I think I bought it from previous, this is from Wilmer State Hospital Cemetery for Andrew, the number 286 for Andrew Forsberg. Just want to point out you have a couple of different handouts. One is it's the marking the unmarked graves, and it gives you a good idea of what we have completed, what's in the works right now, and how much we have left to go. Approximately 8,000 numbered and unmarked graves remaining. By the end of this year, we'll place a few more, about a few more than 5,000, so that leaves approximately 8,000 left to go. And as I mentioned, Anoka, the other packet of pictures there is from the Anoka State Hospital Cemetery. Interestingly, that cemetery is really close to the Anoka High School, so hundreds of students and staff drive by that cemetery every day, but they probably don't know it's there, and they don't know if it's a cemetery or who's buried there, but it just gives you a pictorial, an idea of what these cemeteries are like, and that's actually it's got a fence, so it's demarcated in a good way. And the third thing I want to mention is, you know, we have had four separate appropriations starting in 1997, so it's been over 10 years. So in a sense, this is going to be phase five, you know, hoping that there will be another appropriation this year. We're thankful for those appropriations, but, you know, this project needs to be funded on a faster pace than it currently is. At $200,000 or $300,000, you know, it's already taken a number of years, and you can project out how long it's going to take. That's not cost-effective for you. It's not cost-effective for us. And people want to see this project finished. One of the reasons we're focusing on Anoka this year is that the old state hospital property, these properties were large campuses. Some property has already been sold. A portion of the land adjacent on one side to the cemetery, it looks like it's going to be sold. If it hasn't already, the negotiations are going on with the developer for housing along this strip of land. So we want to make sure that whoever buys into a housing plot right there knows that this they're buying in right next door to a cemetery. So we want to make sure that the cemetery is improved, it's demarcated, there's ways for public access prior to that development taking place. And this is not only happening in Anoka, but in Fergus Falls and other state properties. The land is being sold and developed for other uses, and we want to make sure these cemeteries are preserved and the people can recognize there and families in the public have access to these cemeteries. So you can see the total amount that we're requesting is $2,160,000. That's the amount that we estimated would take to complete the entire 8,000 headstones to be placed in all the state cemeteries that we currently know of. And, you know, it's time that the legislature has made four different financial commitments to this project already, and it's time to make a larger commitment to complete this project, to see, you know, you can see the end now out there as opposed to just saying, let's get started on this, and it's time to do that. So we appreciate your taking the time to listen to this, and we hope that you'll make this a priority. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. We have a couple of questions, Representative Hodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think my question might have been answered, but I do have another one. I'm assuming that this request is to finish all remaining markers.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is.
Mm-hmm. And then just, Mr. Chair, if I could, just a question out of personal curiosity. What year was it the last time that we buried somebody without their name?
1994.
In the 90s, we were still.
In 90s. And in 1997, there were three people that had died in St. Peter, and the grounds crew there were the ones that buried them in the state cemetery on the campus, and it was out of their own pocket that they didn't want to put numbers down. There was no policy that said you need to put a name, so they got the money together and put names on the three graves at that time.
Thank you. Representative Abler.
Thanks. Just briefly, Mr. Chair. I was out of the room for part of your presentation, but like when you're doing the Anoka project, which it's right by the high school there. So just one question. When is that going to be done, did you say?
By the fall of this year.
All right. And when you do that, do you also improve the fencing and the whole amenity around it, or just the headstones?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. The funding that we get goes towards the headstones and some for the administrative costs, but additional things like fencing or like signs, other kinds of memorials or kiosks or those kinds of things, we do our own fundraising to make the improvements on the ground itself. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, it says here that each grave is a total cost of $270. Do you get funding then from some other source, or is this the actual cost of each?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that cost includes the cost of the headstone plus administrative cost of the project.
Other questions? So, seeing none, I'd like to thank you for coming here to testify, and Representative Fritz will be voting on this later.
Thank you.
So thank you, and we do have one thing to do. Representative Fritz.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to thank you for hearing this again. Thank you for the money that we've received, and look forward to completing the project with your help. Thank you very much.
Okay, and we do have a little business to do. We have three sets of minutes that we need to approve from the February 11th, February 6th, and October 16th. So does anybody want to make a motion, or Representative Keeson has a correction?
Well, I'll move them, and I'd like to. I was there on the 11th, so with that amendment, I think that.
So we will make that correction, and any other discussion of the minutes? They've been moved. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So we've approved three sets of minutes. So thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.